Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Future State Spotlight episode. We're on to week two, and I'm going to give everybody a chance to introduce themselves in a second, but I want to go over the books that we're going to be talking about and the creative teams first. So Batman Dark Detective, the main story by Mariko Tamaki, Dan Mora on art, Jordi Belair on colors, Adita Bidikar handles the letters. And then there is a second feature. I'm not even going to call it a backup because it's just as long as the first one. It's a Grifter story. It's written by Matthew Rosenberg. Illustrations are by Carmine D. Jean Domenico, colored by Antonio Fabella, lettered by And World Designs. Over in Green Lantern, the main story, Last Lanterns by Jeffrey Thorne. Art is by Tom Rainey, colors by Michael Atea. Letters there also by And World Design. And then we have a second feature there, which stars Jessica Cruz, which is written by Ryan Caddy. The art in that one is by Simon Basri. Colors are by Hi-Fi and letters are by Dave Sharp. And there's also a third story, a Guy Gardner story in that book, which is written by Ernie Altbacker. The art is by Clayton Henry. Colors by Marcelo Maiello and letters by Steve Wands. Up next, we have the Justice League book. Joshua Williamson handles the writing for the main feature, Robson Rocha, the penciler, Daniel Enriquez on inks, and Romulo Fajardo Jr. is the colorist. And then there's a backup feature starring Justice League Dark. It's written by Ram V. The art is by Marcio Takara, colors by Marcelo Maiello, and letters by Rob Lee. Over in Robin Eternal, Megan Fitzsimmons is the writer, Eddie Barrows pencils, Ibar Ferreira inks, and Adriana Lucas on colors. Superman, Wonder Woman, Dan Waters on script, Layla De Luca art, Nick Filardo colors, and Tom Napolitano on the letters. And then finally, Teen Titans, written by Tim Sheridan, Rafa Sandoval on pencils, Jordi Tarragona on inks, and Alejandro Sanchez with the colors, Rob Lee on letters. So a lot of these art teams they're like literally teams. Like they're people that work together all the time or have worked together in the past. And that's, you're going to hear me. I'm going to sound like a broken record when I start talking about the art, but especially the Robin Eternal, I expect great things from that art team. I've seen them do great things before, and that wasn't necessarily the case here. So I guess we're going to start with Future State Dark Detective, because that's the first one that I have opened up here on my screen. And just to remind everybody who's here, my fellow contributor at LRM Online, Nick Dahl, is here. We have from the Dark Knight Nation YouTube channel, Trevor, and then from the Comic Boom YouTube channel, Comic Boom. And same group of pundits, as it were, last time. And we'll be sure at the end to give everybody a chance to let all the listeners know where they can find you. So I think overall, I thought these books were a little better than last week, but let's dive in and see what everybody thought. And we'll start, as I said, with Dark Knight Detective. Why don't you kick us off, Trevor? What were your thoughts on this one?
I thought it was easily the best book of the week. I think it's definitely a competitor for the best book we've seen in Future State so far. Honestly, a very pleasant surprise. I've been pretty skeptical of Mariko Tamaki taking over such a sort of foundational bat book, Dark Detective essentially functioning as Future State Detective Comics. And obviously that'll bleed into what happens post Future State, but it was a solid issue. There was, I think, some really great character work in the way they're setting up the drama and the sort of mental state of Bruce Wayne, given this brand new context and this context that they sort of marketed was going to be the norm for most of like the Gotham and bat books, but are generally quite disjointed. I feel like this is the only real Gotham City book that is dealing with like the aftermath of the magistrate head on so far. I mean, Dan Mora was absolutely brilliant in this book, literally tip top shape. I think he's one of the few all-star artists that came to Future State with their A game, which I think is an unfortunate sort of statistic, but he killed it, man. Whether it's what he's doing with camera, gestural character acting, kinetics, it felt like I was watching an animated movie, which I think just caters super well to his style. I mean, Tamaki certainly wasn't perfect. I think that this first issue lacked a lot of meat in the plot, but I'm willing to forgive that because it is one of the few books that has four installments over two. So I feel like we can do more plot later, given that the setup feels solid. I think, again, the way we're building stakes for Bruce, I think are solid, and you get a very good sense of the new context without being overly expository for, you know, folks tuning in. That was one of, I think, our sort of major complaints about Future State last week, and it was generally persistent throughout most of this week as well, or that these writers are put in a fairly difficult situation where they have to wrap something up in two issues and set up a brand new context. So it gets, these issues are getting drowned out in expository information and get really chonky, but that definitely wasn't the case for Dark Detective. If anything, I'd say maybe it read a little bit too quick, but overall it was a solid book. It's definitely readable. It's one of the few Future State books that I actually look forward to reading the second installment. So, you know, do what you will with that, but it was solid. I think it's the only Future State book of this week that I could like, definitely recommend to pretty much anybody.
That's fair. So the problems that I had with it were minor. I agree with a lot of what you said. I think it's well structured. I think the plot, it wasn't too much stuffed in there. But again, she does have, Mariko Tamaki, the writer, does have the advantage, as Trevor said, of having four issues. The only thing that kind of bugged me a little bit is like, okay, so Bruce is supposedly dead, but really not. He's on the run. And we've seen this kind of thing before. And so why, yeah, sure. The thing that was, okay, so why is it so different this time? Why is it so much worse this time? Why isn't he reaching out? Why is he going the lone road this time? Because again, we've seen this kind of thing before. And, you know, yeah, maybe he retreats and he's in the shadows, but he still has his, you know, resources and he still has his connection. And this time he decides, well, I'm going to let everybody think I'm dead. So that was just a little like, I wasn't sure about that. But the thing that I did like about it was the fact that this is, maybe the one story we've had set in Gotham where Gotham feels like a character itself. Mm. You know, we're seeing the way it's changed in the future with kind of reminded me of Minority Report with all the advertisements as Bruce has walked around. Mm. Do you gym, bro? And that kind of thing. So totally. I like that. I was kind of confused. Was the girl that we saw in the first couple pages with the dreads and the hoodie, is that supposed to be somebody that we know?
I don't think so. I think she's so. Likely going to be a character moving forward in whatever Tamaki decides to do. Gotcha. It feels like a low hanging fruit, but I'm getting some sort of like, I think that she might be Joker related in some sense. I mean, like the green hair, the really sort of virulent smile that she had. I hope it's not the case, but just based on like Tamaki's track record, unfortunately, I wouldn't leave it. I wouldn't leave it off the table.
you bring up a good point that really, because now, so now it's we've got a new writer on Batman that's never written Batman before. Hmm. Here we go with the whole bucket list thing. Well, if I'm only going to tell one story, it's got to have to be a Batman story. Yeah, I really don't want it. So anyway, what were your thoughts, Rocky? What did you think about Dark Detective?
Sorry, just a minute. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I share Dark Knight's comments or Trevor's comments. I liked it. It was generally good. We hit the ball running. I really liked, I said this before in some of my comments on Twitter. I really loved their narration. I loved the opening line. First page, Gotham. Gotham is a funeral no one's attending.
Yeah.
I love that line, man. And I love the way it all, she brings it home on the final page where Bruce Wayne finally gets his act together. And he says, you know, funeral's over, you know, hinting that, you know, okay, now shit's going to hit the fan. We're going to next issue. I really like it, how it tied it all together. Certainly it's open to criticism. We've certainly gotten stories where Batman's at a low point. It feels like we're in the middle of, at the end of a second act of a movie where all of a sudden, you know, but in that sense, it's kind of exciting because I can't wait for the third act and to get, you know, Bruce Wayne becoming Batman again. And I'm really interested as to who's the peacekeeper, who's peacekeeper number one. Is it Damian? Oh. Is it Tim? Is it like, who is all this,
I think it's Jason based on like Robin Eternal, like not to spoil anything, but I think it might be Jason.
Yeah, these very well could be, you know, characters that we've seen before, or some of the, you know, lesser ones could be some sort of known. Well,
be Damian also, but
yeah,
based on that same word bubble.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's why I was inclined to think it was Damian. Although the Robin Eternal, that's a good comment as well. I'm compelled to say this. You know, we got into a little bit of a pissing match last week about, you know, whether this was better than the other in the next Batman. The fact of the matter is that the reason why this is the best comic book of the week is because of Grifter, the backup, the Grifter storyline. The other story in this comic book is better than the Batman story. No Futures Past by Matthew Rosenberg. The Grifter story is hilarious. It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. It's entertaining as hell. It's more entertaining, I found, than the Batman story. And I ignored it. I bloody well ignored it as an afterthought. And I read it, I think, oh my God, this is a gem in this comic. Matthew Rosenberg. Matthew Rosenberg's premiere. Yeah. I don't know if this is his first story for the DC universe, but I think it is, isn't it?
He's done a couple other things in the past. So when he got announced that he was doing this in Future State, and he's got some Grifter stuff coming in the Batman anthology that's coming in March, I asked Matthew if this was, I'm like, is this your first DC work? Because I didn't remember. He's like, no, I've done a few things in some anthologies here and there, but it's not his first work, but his first, I'd say, regular work.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm really impressed. Again, overall, I really enjoyed the Batman, and the Grifter was such a wonderful surprise. Between these two stories in the same comic book for $5.99, I think it's worth the money. And I mean, Grifter is he's so well written. Nobody likes him. Everybody hates him. Everybody has something against him. There were so many funny moments in that Grifter story. I don't know if I'm cheating. Are we allowed to talk about the backups when we review these comics? Because
I was gonna give everybody a chance to talk about the main story and go up. But please, by all means, continue.
I guess that's really all I have to say about that. I mean, because I'll let you guys talk more about Dark Detective. Overall, this is impressive. I'm gonna come back for the. I'm absolutely. This is a 2-issue story. Of course, I'm gonna be back. I love Grifter. I love Dark Detective. This is, you know. I mean, I'm not gonna complain. Again, I'm still in that mindset. I'm just so in a much better mood with Future State than before. So I'm riding high right now.
All right. What were your thoughts on the main story, Nick? And then you can talk about the Grifter story, because I know what a huge Rosenberg fan you are.
Yeah. Well, only having read one of his books, I'm a huge fan, which is actually true. But I actually, being a huge fan of his, I want the next book I want to read. That's probably going to get for my birthday is Hawkeye Freefall, which gets a lot of compliments, just like, because my favorite book ever, arc ever in comics, and it's a recent one, is Strange Tales? Yeah. No, Tales of Suspense, 100 through 104.
Yep.
And Hawkeye buddy cop with Winter Soldier, and based on that, I used to write for LRM, and I wrote a thing about genres I wanted to see in the MCU, and I was like, I want a Winter Soldier and Hawkeye, like, buddy cop show, because that's what Rosenberg does. I'm actually going to start with Grifter. Like, this also plays, like, a very buddy cop thing when Grifter finds himself in the same vehicle as Fox.
Yeah,
and it really is, like, playing off each other, and which I think is Rosenberg's strength, I guess, this being one of the only things I've read of his, because that's exactly what Tales of Suspense 100 to like 105 was. And I'm also a fan of events because I got the first signed copy of the graphic novel when Jace and I were hanging out at Denver Comic Con.
Yeah, cool. Chance to introduce
him. I love that scene. There's a scene in the Grifter comic where a big huge guy approaches Grifter, and he's pissed off at him because, you know, he says, I hired you for a protection job. You never showed. And he's a huge guy, and Grifter says, a protection job? From who? Yeah. Superman? Because the guy's huge. He's like, anyways, it's just moments like that that just sort of put a smile on my face. And it was, like I said, it was just a fun read. And what I like about it is that you don't need to know anything about the magistrate. This could actually be a good grifter story set in any time or place. Grifter is a guy that can fit in, whether it's the magistrate of Gotham or the old Gotham, the new Gotham, the future. Grifter is always a grifter. He's always a lowlife. He's always an asshole. And he's like DC's Deadpool without the mask.
Yeah,
he's not as whack. Yeah, fine.
He's the character that they always kind of bring whenever they. Okay, let's try to make the Wildstorm characters work again. It's always Grifter they start with. There's a reason for that, because he works like Rocky said in any context.
It's the only time I've read him. He has no powers, right?
He has like a healing factor and his.
Okay, and he's good with guns and stuff. So he's kind of like Deadpool. I don't know, but when I look at him as a movie fan, I see like Eddie Murphy and Beverly Hills Cop. Type of character.
Yeah, I mean his I would say his healing factor isn't as comprehensive as Deadpool's, and his, you know, heightened sentences, reflexes, all that. He's much less, you know, he's not as high up the ladder as Deadpool is. But yeah, I mean his irreverent attitude, and he's kind of the guy you root for despite the fact that he's kind of a jerk. For me, what I really loved, and this is really the case, and Trevor touched on it, this is really the case for this whole issue. The art in this issue is great. Both from Dan Mora. It's as good as any Dan Mora art I've ever seen, which unfortunately isn't the case with most of these artists. I either haven't seen their work and the work here I feel isn't very good, or I've seen their work before and this seems to be a step down in quality from the art I've seen before. But this art from Dan Mora is as good as anything I've ever seen him do. And the Dijon Domenico art is actually better than anything I've seen him do. And I think part of it is because previously most of his work has been on the Flash and he's been a little looser with his line work, trying to show movement and such and you know, keeping the art style real kinetic, because you kind of need to do that in a Flash book. Here, his line work is much more solid. And I think overall it's the best work I've seen him do. So I really did enjoy the artwork in the Grifter story. Did you have any thing you wanted to add about the Grifter story, Trevor?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, I think what saved Dijon Domenico's art in Grifter were the colors. I think he says Fabella doing colors, right?
For the backup, let me double check that. I think that's right. Let me get there. Well, Fabella. Yep.
In any case, I think that the way that the colorist layers the colors, I think they were able to clean up some of John Domenico's like typical, like frantic line work. I mean, that's like the perfect way to describe how he sets his lines. And I think it seems like even you can get like little bits of the frantic, but they're kind of cut short. So it tells me that I think the colorist is actually using a layering effect to get rid of some of that scratchiness and just kind of centralize the lines rather than make them feel so out there. I mean, I thought the Grifter story was fine. Like I was looking forward to it. I like Matthew Rosenberg. I thought it was fun. It was a cool little romp, you know, and it is what it is. It wasn't great. I did feel at times like, He hit with a couple of the early jokes and then it just kept going and going and going. I'm like, all right, cool. More jokes. Got it. We're going to kick Luke Fox in the face. Got it. Like
you have to, okay. you got to drink. You got to drink, Trevor. When you read Grifter, you have to have a drink in your hands.
It's like, to me, that's like one of those things where people are like, you just sometimes when you read things or you watch things, you just got to turn your brain off. And I was like, I don't get the logic in that. I honestly never will. Also too, I was like just thinking about as a quick response to what you were saying, like you didn't quite know what Jace, what made this angle of like the down and dirty Bruce Wayne without his resources, what makes it different? And I think it's the perspective. I think particularly like the narrative of Bruce looking at the city as something that is unfamiliar to him. And especially it having once been something that he helped shape. I think that's what
I get that. But my point being, but why does he look at it? You know, like what's the reasoning? I guess is more what I'm thinking. Like, okay, he's been in this situation before and he hasn't had to deal with it this way. Maybe it's the magistrate that's different. That's why he can't reach out to his resources. I just thought it was kind of weird.
Well, I had kind of interpreted it as like, I mean, clearly he got shot and is quote unquote dead or could have died. As far as I think at that point, Bruce kind of tucks into his own little hidey hole and he's like, well, if I, the best of the Bat family, was nearly murked, I don't think I should get anybody else involved. That was just where I was at. And also, like, I think a big part of it is that there's an absolute ass ton of disjunction between books that you kind of thought would have been connected. Things are taking place at different times. You don't know where people are. In some cases, Nightwing's insane. In some cases, he's with the Titans. In some cases, he's Red X. In some cases, he's Red Y. Who the fuck? Like,
he's not Nightwing in the Titans.
Well, he's Death Nightwing. He's Deathstroke Nightwing. Like,
he's
Dick, I don't know. Huh?
He's Dick Grayson, right? He doesn't want to be called Nightwing, so he's Dick Grayson. But then at the end, he puts on the Deathstroke mask, so he's Dick Stroke.
Yeah, he's.
That's who he is. At the,
but either way,
I mean, holding on to that one.
I mean, either way, there's no like symbiosis between the books. So I think at this point, I think in a way, Tamaki kind of makes a pretty good call by not muddying the waters even more.
Yeah, that's fair. Nick, you didn't say much about Dark Detective. Did you have anything to add?
Not a lot. Mainly just, the idea that you just mentioned of like the timing between all of them is weird. And I know we said, I complained about this last week and you said technically it is all the future, but it's like, how is this future state? He still looks like he's 29 or like, he still looks like he has too many Robins, let alone like having also taught like spoiler and like, he doesn't look old enough to like to be a Batman that's done these things. He still is like New 52 issue one Batman.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's just the art style, but it's like he should be in his like mid 30s to 40s Batman.
That's definitely the part where you have to do what Trevor said and turn your brain off. You can't think too much about how these guys are because it just doesn't work.
I mean, but I understand they don't have to age because it's comic books like The Simpsons. But then when you start adding that many Robins, you're like, okay, some time has passed.
Yeah, put some gray in his hair. That'll be it.
But this one does no gray in his stubble was, I guess, my main problem with this book. Otherwise, I enjoyed it.
Let's move on to Green Lantern's number one. The main story. I don't even know where to start. The art by Tom Rainey, I thought that it looked rushed. It looked sloppy. Sometimes the perspective's just off. I feel like the splash page there. John Stewart's head looks almost as big as his leg from the hip to the knee. And I'm not sure how that works. That's kind of something that it's a theme throughout the art. So it just, the perspectives don't look right to me. So again, I don't know if it's just the artwork being rushed. But I thought the colors were decent. And the story, you know, the visual storytelling was good. Panel layouts, everything like that was fine. It certainly, there's a lot of characters. So, you know, I could understand why it would be a little rushed, but the story itself is really where I kind of had a problem. I mean, we're talking, for decades now, apparently these Green Lanterns haven't had working power rings, but yet they're still going to be out there defending the galaxy and being the police force in the galaxy. And while Noble, for the most part, the species is certainly the ones that we see here that are out there defending. They don't come from martial races, you know, military type planets where everybody's, you know, physically has the strength. I mean, they're going up against the Kuns. I'm sorry, a platoon of Kuns is going to overrun, you know, these humans and these other species, you know, other than Kilowog, these aren't exactly, you know, strong specimens. It's one thing, it's comics, I know, and you're supposed to suspend your disbelief, but this was so far beyond anything I could buy that it constantly just took me out of the story. You know, yes, I get it. John Stewart was a Marine. And for me, that narrative, that's not the way that I was introduced to John Stewart. So that's never worked for me. I liked him from the projects, Architect, kind of John Stewart more. And that's still kind of how I see him. And that's on me. That's what I'm bringing to the table. But I'm sorry, like, I don't care how well-trained your Marine Corps unit is. You're not going to stand up to this race of aliens that comes from a military planet. They're all raised as warriors from birth. That's their whole culture. It's all about war. They're going to be overrun, you know, quite quickly, I feel. And that didn't happen here. So
I just didn't really like it. And I have grave concerns over what Jeffrey Thorne is going to do with Green Lanterns. I still can't get over the fact that DC decided to put a writer on Green Lantern who despises Hal Jordan, and it's called Hal Jordan the worst comic creator ever created. I mean, he just, like, the vitriol this guy has spewed online about Hal Jordan, it's ridiculous. Like, fine, I haven't read anything by Jeffrey Thorne. If he's a good writer, put him on a different book. I don't understand putting him on Green Lantern when he despises Hal Jordan. I mean, he apparently deifies John Stewart, so...
Yeah, I mean, even if that's the case, I mean, his writing in this issue fucking blows.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I could give a shit, like, what characters you like, what characters you don't like, as long as, like... I just said like way too many times. As long as you bring something valuable to the table and he brings absolutely nothing. This felt like a shit 90s Image comic. I don't care about it. It's
bad. The pacing is bad. The plot is, like I said, nonsensical.
He does this thing where he's like, yeah, we're doing cool sci-fi stories. So the characters are going to say random sci-fi things. And we're going to say the word alpha way too fucking much. And
replace curse words.
Dude, like, it's like.
That old trick.
He sounds like he's trying to be like sci-fi Bill Cosby. He's like, but with like sci-fi shit, and like it doesn't work. It's messy.
The artwork being that the perspective is off on so many things, and there's so many characters so busy, it only contributes to that feeling of, hey, we threw everything at the kitchen sink, or everything at the wall to see what sticks. You know, everything but the kitchen sink, and hey, guess what? None of it worked.
It's not good. I mean, like, the artist does some pretty okay things with camera, like that, but that's about it. I mean, almost every other quality of the artwork was just like straight mediocre. Layouts were okay, I guess. They were a little bit frantic, but I guess, you know, you're in war, so maybe he was going for frantic. Like I said, fine stuff with camera work, but like everything that was in the camera looked real pedestrian at absolute best. Like I said, this in both the writing and the art feels like a shit 90s Image comic. And I'm sure there's somebody that's going to eat this up as people ate up shitty 90s Image comics. But I'm just like, not only do I not care about what's happening, like you're certainly doing the exact opposite of like trying to make me care. Like I just,
yeah. And you know what made it even worse? So when we get to the second story, which is written by Ryan Caddy and the artwork by Sammy Basri. Here we are with some fine lines, some great gesture work, some great expression work, you know, great facial expressions and things like that. And I thought that the story that Ryan Caddy played out here, it was paced well, it was plotted well. He's very true to the character of Jessica Cruz. You know, she's on this space station out in the middle of nowhere. She has to take on three Yellow Lanterns by herself. And not just, you know, any of them. One of them is like the embodiment of the Yellow Lantern Bible, if you want to call it. And it's great. You know, it makes sense. The things that she's doing, it's not too far fetched. And, you know, in the end, she gets recruited to be a Yellow Lantern herself. And anybody who knows Jessica will know that, you know, fear has always been a big part of her story. You know, she was agoraphobic at one time, suffered from, you know, anxiety and things like that. So you look at that first story compared to the second one, and it makes the first one look, you know, even worse. And then when you talk about the last story, it's kind of humorous. If you're a Guy Gardner fan, I think you really like it. He's on this planet, basically supposed to be brokering a peace between these two warring factions that are fighting over a piece of space trash, literally, that fell to their planet. And he's on that planet when his ring stops working. And then we get a story that spans years and years of him continuing to sort of have to live there and be stuck there and continue to broker the peace, even though he doesn't have any powers. And it seems like things are moving along pretty well. And then right at the end, Lobo shows up and he's like, man, I was so damn close. So kind of humorous. I'm not a big Guy Gardner or Lobo guy, but I thought there was value in that story as well. The thing that I like most about it, and where I'll give credit to Altbacker, was that he didn't try to do too much. You know, it's very much just a showcase for Guy, and he's not trying to stuff too much in there. And you could say the same thing for Clayton Henry on art. You know, there's a lot of aliens in a lot of the panels, but he still manages to keep his line work clean and
you know, unlike a lot of the artists, like I talked about, turning in subpar work, I think this is, you know, it's pretty much up there with Clayton Henry's standard. So I would rank the middle story, the second story with Jessica Cruz, as the best story in the book, and one I really enjoyed, you know, up there with one of the best stories of the week. The Guy Gardner one's probably just kind of average. And that first story by Jeffrey Thorne is just trash, as Trevor said. So what were your thoughts on this one, Nick? I know you're not the biggest Green Lantern guy, so you probably don't have that much to say, I would guess, but curious where you
this one. I don't know. The first story, it's like, no, none of the characters except for John Stewart. So I'm like, whatever. I get the concept. The ring stopped working. It's all very busy, and I don't like the look of it. Like, just the style of art. I don't necessarily know, like, well, the other stuff works. But I did like Jessica Cruz's story. It was awesome. And like a reverse alien. There's even like a reference to it in that point. Like, it's stalking us or whatever. And it's a fun story. I really do like the way that one looks. And then finally, I am, from what I've read, I haven't read a lot of it, of his stuff. I am a Guy Gardner fan, so I enjoyed the final story actually the best. But yeah, definitely the two in the back. The first one I was kind of...
Wait, so you like the Guy Gardner story, the humor and such, even more than the Jessica Cruz story?
Yeah, I really like humor, obviously, when it comes to this kind of stuff. Because he's another, like, grifter type character when it comes to just kind of personality. Batman and Constantine are my favorite. I guess they all have a little bit of Constantine side. I'd call it that more than a Deadpool side.
There you go.
Right, what like, we're, that's just how I view the world.
Rocky even wore his Green Lantern hat for the occasion. So what were your thoughts on
this? Just to be clear, those who aren't otherwise listening to this on a podcast, I'm wearing a Green Lantern cap and a Green Lantern shirt. the irony is that I almost forgot about that the schedule doing this today, and yet I wore this because this is one of my favorite comics of the week. It's all because of Jessica Cruz. This story is really good. Why editorially they made a huge mistake marketing this. It should only be Jessica Cruz. It should be Jessica Cruz front and center on the cover. It should be Jessica Cruz. This, I mean, editorially, the DC should have focused on the spec market on this. They should have focused on this is a character driven spec. This is her becoming a member of the Sinestro Corps. This is a story driven spec. Because this is the culmination of a phenomenal story arc for her that you mentioned it, Chase. You hinted at it. I mean, she started off in Dark Side War, get from the Power Ring from Earth 3, under the influence of the Power Ring, it takes advantage of people who fear, who have anxiety, and she. That's why the Power Ring chose her, is because she was weak and pathetic. It's not a good thing that she was chosen to have a power ring from Earth 3. And then from there, she got willpower. She became a member of the Green Lantern Corps. She overcame her fear. And then through it all, through the pages of Justice League Odyssey, where she really, those who read Justice League Odyssey know the journey of Jessica Cruz. It was fantastic. She was killed by Darkseid, and then the Omega energies infused with her. And then she became something else with the ring. And then here she is completing that arc at, jumping smack dab in the future, and she ends up not only overcoming fear, but now has the ability to instill it in others. I mean, just a fantastic arc. I just wish we should have had a final double page spread with her becoming a Sinestro Corps, so you could have that first appearance for the spec market. And because I think you could have had the best of all the worlds marketing wise on this.
She's got a TV show coming too.
What's that?
She has a TV show coming as well.
Well, that's exactly right. I never even, you're right. Just another example. And I don't have much to say. I share your guys' comments on the first story by Jeffrey Thorne. I actually really, really like the art. I like the art much better than you guys do. I find it different. I actually like the different artistic styles in this comic, because I think a Green Lantern comic, if you're going to have three stories in a Green Lantern comic, having very different artistic styles reinforces the idea that you're dealing with alien races and everybody look, you know, they look differently. So I think that actually enhanced the comic from my perspective. I really like the action progression in the first story. I think Jeffrey Thorne, you know, and the art laid out, it was fun to page through. It was visually, I enjoyed paging through the story. But admittedly, not much happened. You could have told this story in three pages. You could have told that story in three pages. But at least if you're going to have it long, at least the art, I enjoyed the art. Guy Gardner, I thought it was sort of typical Guy Gardner story, but I liked it. I wish Lobo would have been more involved in the story. I would have liked to have seen Lobo arrive a little earlier and have four or five pages of mayhem with against the Guy Gardner without a ring. I think that would have been a little bit more interesting. But overall, again, just another Future State comic that's put a smile on my face, man.
Fair enough. Anything to add about those last two stories, Trevor?
I think the Jessica Cruz one featured some pretty decent art. There were definitely some hiccups with like physical blocking issues, like the page with the knockout gas. Somehow the the axe goes flying first, and yet the shelf full of knockout gas is somehow hits the ground before the axe does, and the axe just happens to fall on top of it. There's some sort of blocking issues there. There's also a moment in the art where Jessica Cruz is being held down by a yellow light construct, and yet somehow she's able to like get out of it and pick up the lantern to bash Lisa Drax in the face with it. It didn't make a lot of sense. I think there was some interesting like metaphorical stuff going on with Jessica Cruz's character. But, you know, there were some definite oversights in terms of, like I said, physical blocking and things like that. Also, I thought the weapon turning off at the most inconvenient time was really tropey. You know, it's just like, okay, fine, you did it. But it was like one of the better stories in this issue for sure. And the guy one was just like a fun little, you know, it was like, it's a good time. You know, you just kind of enjoy it for what it is. I think that Clayton Henry, you know, artistically did his thing. You know, he brought it, which is all that I can ask for, considering our criticisms of a lot of at least A and B list artists that aren't bringing their A game. Overall, there's no chance in hell I'm buying this issue again. And I think the next one or one of them has a Robert Venditti story, and I'm still not buying it.
Yeah, I'm not giving any Jeffrey Thorne books my money either.
Yeah. Also, just to set the record straight, the last time we catered to the spec market, we crashed the comic book industry. So,
all right. Well, let's move on to Justice League number one, Joshua Williamson. And so I have mixed feelings about this. I think where Joshua Williamson works best is when he's dealing with relationships, which aren't always the you know, fastest paced or most action filled books. And really this Future State Justice League really focuses on that sort of thing, how the Justice League is purposely denying themselves relationships because of things that have happened in the past. It's when you think about it, here are these heroes that are supposedly experienced. And this is so obviously a bad thing to do and a bad way to go about things that I question that. But it also makes for sort of a, not the most compelling read, because you in the first couple pages when you learn about this, you know, mandatory secret identities, no fraternization, no sharing their true lives. It's so obviously a bad idea and would harm teamwork that at that point you almost can just stop reading. Say, well, I already know the basic idea and what where the dramatic tension is going to come from. You know, basically the problem, it's all right there. You know, it's like the third or fourth page. And you know it's not going to go well. So at that point, you just kind of throw your hands up and go, well, I can probably just read like the last three pages of issue two when it gets resolved and the middle is just filler. And so, you know, I like the interactions he gives us here, but at that point, it's almost just going through the motions, right? Yeah, the dialogue and the interpersonal relationships can be interesting. But the point of Future State is that we're only getting two issues of these characters. It's a possible future. So why do I care? You know, this was some kind of ongoing where these versions of the characters are going to go on, then maybe I do, because now you're talking about characterization for the long term. But knowing this is only going to last, you know, two issues, knowing what the central conceit is of, okay, they've chosen not to have any sort of relationship, which is going to harm their teamwork, which is going to, you know, make it hard for them to overcome you know, villainy or whatever the big bad is going to end up being in this book. So I can read like the first few pages and the last few pages, and I'll know just as much as anybody who reads the story. The rest of it is just going through the motions. And so that's kind of the problem that I had with this one. That being said, probably my favorite relationship, because again, you see this coming a mile away. They're not supposed to have relationships. They're not supposed to have friendships. But of course, some of them are defying that to, you know, some level or another. And we see Andy Curry, Aquaman, and Mira's daughter, and the new Flash, Jess, who's a non-binary character, are still hanging out, friends, maybe more. And so I did, you know, enjoy their interaction. But again, is it necessary for the story? Not really. Could have been any two of the characters. And again, you read the first three pages, read the last three, you're going to know the whole story. The backup, the Justice League Dark story, it was okay. I was expecting more, being that it was a Ram V story. And I'm not big in the magical corner of the DCU. So I thought it was okay. I thought it was interesting seeing Etrigan, Detective Chimp being the vessel for Etrigan. I thought was an interesting take. He certainly didn't seem to be very happy with it. But again, I thought it was okay. It seemed to be anything groundbreaking, just kind of, you know, just another magical story in the DCU. This one happened to be set in the future, but wouldn't necessarily have to be, based on, you know, the story being told, could be set in the current DCU just as easily. So didn't really feel like anything special to me. So why don't we have you go first this time, Rocky? What are your thoughts on Justice League Future State number one?
I got to say, overall, I enjoyed it, but for a very schizophrenic, ironic kind of reason. I disagree with you quite vehemently, Jace, when you say that Joshua Williamson is generally good at character stories. I think he's terrible at character stories, and I think his Flash run is an evidence of that. I think he's really bad at it. And I think that's exactly why this comic book is perfect for Joshua Williamson, because there's really no characterizations that he needs to focus on, because they're not supposed to know each other's secret identities. And so that's, I say that being deliberately kind of an asshole saying that. But having said that, I do think I'm being overly harsh. I think Joshua Williamson, I'm inclined to think that he didn't have much choice on this. I wish we had a Future State Bible. I wish they had a main Bible or a Future State Bible of some time for us to read before all these books came out, because I'm not sure where all this stuff falls on the timeline, to be honest. I like all the various comics, generally speaking, but I feel a little bit confused in terms of how this all fits in. But I really like the new Legion of Doom, and I was very excited, and then I turned the page and they're all dead. and I like the new Green Lantern, Joe. I like how I like her attitude. She's kind of a bitch, and yet I kind of like her attitude a little bit. I like Yara Flores' attitude as well. I kind of like the women are a little bit more hard ass overall in Future State, and I like that. I like Annie. I like the teasing of relationships. I like how Joshua Williamson tries to have those relationships build up behind the scenes between John and Yara and Andy and the Jesse. And overall, I thought he did a good job here. And I'm usually pretty hard on Joshua Williamson. So, you know what? I got to give him props. I enjoyed this. I really liked the final page reveal with the hyper. Is that, it's okay to spoiler free that?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Is, with the hyper clan. Honestly, the last time I saw the Hyper Clan, was probably the way back in the Morrison days. I don't know if they've been back since then, but I liked it. Artistically, I thought it worked really well. The penciler, Robson Rocha, it worked. He's everything was like. How he even managed to pull off a couple of character moments was surprising to me too. I would say probably the one character that surprised me the most, that is probably to keep an eye out for, is Green Lantern herself. How she figured out that at the end, I'm not sure how she knew that Superman wasn't really Superman, but somebody else.
Williamson probably doesn't know either.
Yeah, well, fair enough. But I guess overall, if I eliminate my preconceptions, because we did a podcast on eliminating on biases the other day, and if I eliminate my bias and just go in this fresh, I'm gonna be getting the next issue of this, because I am curious to see how it's going to resolve.
Fair enough. Yeah, I thought, you know, I'm usually a big fan of Robson. I didn't think that was his best work. It's just not as clean as I'm used to seeing his art, especially his Green Lantern work that he did with Venditti. The art is so clean, and here it's not. And maybe that's purposeful. I don't know. But it just it bothered me, because I expected more from him. So what about you, Nick? What are your thoughts on the Justice League? I know you got something to say about that Justice League Dark story. Got your boy Constantine.
I don't remember what happened in that one, just because I read through it so fast. I just remember the Professor Chimp, and
well, remember at the
end, maybe Xanadu's in it, which you don't see that often anymore.
Yeah, well, remember at the end that blind homeless guy turns out to be Dr. Fate.
Yeah, that, and then of course Constantine's just been hanging out. My problem with the Justice League Dark books since they started this current round is that how I got into them was being a fan of Constantine. So I feel like I like it when he's like, he's always, it's felt like in New 52, he was team leader, but he wasn't, because he didn't want to be, but he really was like the heart of the comic. I don't feel like they've gotten back to that. They don't really even have a Constantine ongoing, and I haven't read the Black Label story. So it's not enough Constantine going on right now, unless you're on the CW.
Well, the Constantine ongoing, didn't it just end like a couple months ago?
Yeah.
And
yeah, people were, I thought,
yeah.
Oh, there was one, but since I read the other one, ongoing I read like ended like
the Black
a year
Label's
ago.
Still going, I think.
Well, no, I'm saying there was one written by Cy Spurrier that people were saying that it was like the best thing since Hellblazer was back at Vertigo.
Dang. Yeah, it only has
haven't bought like new 11, comics in a while.
11 or 12 issues. Yeah.
Because the last time I was reading it was during Rebirth, and they just like ended it. Like with an ending, but like,
oh okay. Yeah. Look up the Cy Spurrier one, man. I know people that are like big Constantine, like OG Hellblazer guys that say that it's the best thing since he was back at Vertigo.
I have to look into it.
All right, Jerry, anything else to add about Justice League?
Yeah. Boy, if I'm getting rid of my biases and coming into this clearly, it still fucking sucks. it's bad. I mean, it's Williamson doing Williamson things. He does that really horribly lazy thing where he's like, yeah, we're going to work with the next generation of characters. And by doing that, I mean, we're really going to identify all the downfalls of their predecessors in order to make them look good. And we're not going to elaborate on them. We're just going to tell you. And because I'm telling you, you're going to believe me. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. I don't care. The idea that they're all keeping their identity secret because of the mistakes of the Justice League past. I mean, evidently half of them know who the other half are already. I mean, John Kent probably grew up with Andy Curry. So there's no doubt they know. There's no doubt that they don't know each other. And if they don't, then it's just some dumb stroke that, you know, Williamson has no idea what he's doing. He does that thing with Joe Moline that he did with Barry Allen, where he's like, yeah, I'm going to tell you that they're a great detective, and they're just going to fucking know because the plot needs it, and we're not going to identify the process of the detection, which I think just inherently means that you're telling a sloppy detective story. And if Batman's not the world's greatest detective, why is he on the team? Why? Why? Like, I'm a Batman guy, right? Like, that's my channel's literally named after Batman. Why the fuck do you need Batman on the Justice League if he's not the smartest guy in the room? What else does he have to offer?
The coolness factor. Everyone thinks they're cooler when Batman is around.
It's just like, I love Robson Rocha. I own an original Robson Rocha page. I've been asking for Robson Rocha on Justice League. This was some of Robson Rocha's weakest work I've ever seen. There are moments, specific moments in this book where I looked at it and I'm like, boy, I didn't know Brian Hitch was drawing this thing. And speaking of dialogue, I know somebody brought up dialogue and rather complimented him earlier, and I disagree entirely. He does that really horrible thing where when the whole team's on the screen, they all have to say something. Like, they all have to say something, and they all have to say, Oh, well, Wonder Woman, what do you think? I don't know, Superman. Let's ask Aquawoman. I don't know. Let's ask the Flash. The Flash, how do you feel about this? Green Lantern? Oh, do you have something to say? And it's just like, it's just sloppy. Who needs it, man? Like, why can't we just have a nice spread where we just see the whole league and the only people that actually have things worth saying say them. I don't need everybody on screen to talk. They did the same thing with the Legion of Doom. They're like, let's do a little round table so everybody knows who's here. I don't care, man. Just comics are visual. All I need to see is that somebody's there. And if you want to go as far as giving me the little caption telling me who they are, because nobody gives a fuck about Cobalt Blue, by the way. So I can see why they need those captions. Then cool, do the captions. But like, I don't care. Like, I just... there's nothing about this that makes me like invested in the characters, their drama, the stakes of it, I guess are there. Like he sets up stakes. That might be the only decent thing that Williamson is able to do in this issue. And there are some moments where Robson Rocha looks like Robson Rocha, and that's awesome. Cause Robson Rocha, when he's coming at it, he's one of the most underrated guys in comics. But I just didn't need any of this. Like you could have turned this into five pages and it could have been done, and it could have been cleaner if perhaps you had a better writer on the book, but you don't. You have Williamson. Also, slightly less Justice League related, I think this Batman is Luke Fox, and I think they're going to reveal that both Luke and Tim are Batman. I think they're going to be Batmen. Hot,
horrible, stupid idea that is.
But here's the thing. Are you putting it behind Future State? Like, is that something you would leave off the table with how Future State has been?
Especially like since he covers his mouth, unless it's like a false.
I don't know. I mean, we already know that happened. We already know we're getting more next Batman content.
With how poorly the stakes were built up in the last one, how much better would it be if they were like, yeah, there's just going to be two different Batman with two different sets of ideals, and we're going to take the family drama out into the streets of Gotham, and they're gonna fight each other because this is actually a Zack Snyder movie. Anyways, yeah. The Justice League Dark one was it was just like another meh, you know, like kind of forgettable. There was some really good camera work that Marcio Takara does on the art, and I thought the color was pretty good. But you know, ultimately the most exciting thing was when Detective Chimp turned into Etrigan, you know. And if that's your peak, then it's a little bit disappointing. I'm actually like kind of bummed with like Ram V so far and his Future State showing, man. I like Ram V a lot. I haven't been in love with anything he's done for Future State yet. So,
all right, Nick, did you have something else you were going to add?
I just hadn't talked about Justice League, and all I'm really going to say about that is I'm really not a team book guy, unless it is a Justice League Dark, like that focuses on a Constantine or features him up front. Or I like reading most of the Avengers books, but as far as DC, like. Or even in Marvel, I don't like X-Men. I don't like the team books as much. It's just...
that's fair.
I think most of the Justice League I've read is probably the worst team books I've read. Maybe I've just read the wrong issues. But like, I find all these characters more interesting in their own individual books. Like, I'd rather see Batman and Superman. I didn't even like the comic Batman Superman. I'd rather have them cross over, but I don't know, do their own shit.
So funny.
This is a typical team up. Defeat the heroes plot, which is let's pretend to be the heroes and make them look like jerk offs.
Yeah, I get that. So when I was a kid though, man, I was all about the teen books, and this was the reasoning, right? I had limited funds to buy comics. I couldn't buy all the comics I wanted because then I would have bought everything. But I always like loved the teen books because then I was getting to see more characters, and that's why I loved Legion of Superheroes, because I get to see more cool powers. You know, the more
I can see that.
But you know that I was like 4, 5 years old, you know.
What a point where I'm like getting every DC book. It's like, yeah, I prefer the Batman story and the Superman story too.
All right, well, we're gonna have you go first on this next one, Nick. I'm real curious what people think about this one. So, Kara Zor-El, Superwoman. We had a bit of a talk about this already over Twitter, and so while I do concede that Marguerite Sauvage, the artist, is an incredible artist. To me, her work looks very like children's storybook. And it doesn't convey motion very well in my mind. So I'm not saying she's a bad artist like at all, but I think she's better suited to doing sort of covers or pinups. Cause I don't feel like her art really shows much motion. And especially with the watercolor type colors that, that she does, again, I don't know that it's suited for superhero comics. I mean, it may be that even though I don't feel it conveys a lot of emotion, she may be better off doing kind of slice of life things. I'm not sure. So that immediately always takes me out of it. And then the other part of it that I didn't really care for, it's like, okay, so this one clearly takes place, you know, years, if not decades after the Superman of Metropolis sort of story, where Kara has moved on. Now she's set up this, you know, colony on the moon for people who don't seem to fit in anywhere else. And she sort of adopted this idea of pacifism and don't fight and harmony and unity and kumbaya. And let's all sit around the campfire and roast marshmallows and sing songs. But then when she's faced with a threat, of course, she's going to revert back to, I'm sorry. She apologizes to the memory of Crypto, who apparently is the one that she made her vow to no longer fight. That's right, a dog. And she feels bad that she's reverting to violence, as it were, to solve problems, because she doesn't really have a choice. And it's supposed to be this big impactful moment with this great Marguerite Sauvage art when she's firing off her heat vision. I'm sorry, Crypto, you know, one arm raised, and she's wearing this very matronly outfit with a skirt. It just didn't work for me. It felt very heavy handed. I know Marguerite Bennett, the writer, is much better than this. She's much more subtle. Again, I go back to, well, maybe there's just not enough room for subtlety in the story. She only has two issues. She's trying to, you know, display this. So ultimately, this was a real low point for me. It didn't work. I come to expect better from these two. And yeah, I just didn't care for it. There was nothing about this that I liked, other than there's one page that's like a stained glass window that's great art, beautiful to look at. But again, it's like, what does that have to do with the story? You know, I don't know. It just didn't work for me. This was one of my least favorite books of the entire Future State so far. So what about you, Nick? What are your thoughts?
Besides Detective Comics and Batman, I think the comic I've read the most consecutive issues of ever is Supergirl, because my friend Andrew got during New 52. So I've read every issue of Supergirl in New 52, which I realize is a very different Supergirl than this. I think they spent most of that series without her even knowing English. I don't know. This is very different than what I was reading then, obviously, because New 52 Supergirl was different.
It's fine. I just like the art because it's different, but I agree it doesn't convey a lot of movement. It's just more like, I don't know, like a child's book, like an Alice in Wonderland. Someone would like draw pictures to it and it would look just like this. And I don't know, losing a pet's tough, man. Like, what if you promise your pet something? You can't go back on that. Like, so find that believable. And I don't have much else to say about this book because
I mean, did you like it? Did you like it?
I enjoyed it. It didn't offend me. It didn't feel like a waste of time either. It didn't feel like a waste of time, and I didn't particularly like it. It was like in the middle.
That was me.
So yeah.
All right.
In the middle, maybe. Towards the
bottom. You have strong feelings about this one?
I mean, I guess, you know, if I don't know who asked for like 1950s, like house mom, Supergirl, but you got it. I mean, this was just ultimately like pretty mediocre. I guess I need to commit to a diet by like swearing on my dead dog in order for me to like actually accomplish it. Whatever. Okay, cool. Like if that's what you got to do. It's just like the word that comes to mind when I think of this, because I guess I've just been thinking of one word responses to these books. This one in particular is just lame. It's just a lame book. It feels like, you know, Supergirl fairy princess fan fiction. I think the best part about the art was like some character acting, mostly in the face, mostly only in the face, actually. Facial expressions, I thought, were pretty solid. That kind of brought this sort of Eastern art influence. Other than that, yeah, I mean, it was just kind of mediocre. There's not much to say about it, you know? Like, the last time we saw Supergirl in Future State, she was hyper aggressive, and now she's like a mega pacifist.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know, DC, maybe hire some competent editors. Like, I know, Rock, you were asking for like a sort of Bible for this. You know, we wouldn't need a Bible if DC had a couple competent editors in the house. And there's no surprise. And all I'll say is this, that there's no surprise that Jamie Rich's name is on this book, because it feels like a book edited by Jamie Rich, AKA, there's no actual editing involved. So good job, DC. Your streak of mediocrity is just really, really hitting its stride.
At least they're consistent. What's your thoughts, Rocky?
As I said, I did say earlier, having some sort of Bible probably would have been helpful on this. I do think, though, that there is at least some consistency with the Superman of Metropolis comic. There's no question here that if I didn't know better, I think writer Marguerite Bennett actually is in on the joke, and I actually think she probably, in her heart of hearts, doesn't think that Supergirl, like Kara Zor-El, would ever actually do what she's ultimately doing in Future State. There's a comment, and I'm going to read the comment verbatim. It's from Lenari, the young girl that Kara Zor-El is trying to help. And Lenari criticizes Superwoman, at one point, and she says, and I quote, "If you had any real family, any kind of real family, you wouldn't content yourself with shutting yourself up in this glass coffin, stuck as a sad, shy, isolated martyr." That is exactly what Superwoman is in this comic. I mean, really, I never really believed it. I said in the Superman of Metropolis comic, I never felt it was earned. I never felt the disconnect that in the characters of Superman, of John Kent and Kara Zor-El. I don't know why they stopped getting along. It didn't make sense to me. I never felt it. And so I never really believed it. And so in that respect, I find it hard to believe that Kara would go to the moon of all places. Also, where are the Danvers? I mean, this talk is if she's confiding in a dead dog, Crypto. I mean, she's got, what happened to the Danvers? There's no mention of them. She's talking as if not having a family. I collect Supergirl. I've read Supergirl. She does have a family that loves her. She has all that. So this whole thing is premised on things which are demonstrably false. That's what frustrates me in that regard. If you're reading Supergirl for the first time, you'll have no idea that she actually has a family on Earth. What happened to them? In any event, so story-wise, it has a moral and a theme and a lesson. For a story in and of itself, it'll be a good two-parter and it'll be done. But yeah, I can't defend the story itself. I like I actually don't mind the art. I do agree with you, Chase, that emotionally, the art, Marguerite Savage on the art, she does have a hard time conveying emotions in her faces sometimes. But overall, I do think it had a nice visual feel to it, and it was a pleasant enough read, but yeah, it was definitely like in the meh category.
Yeah, maybe she's just upset that her TV show got canceled. That's the motivation behind that.
Right. Thing.
All right, well, let's move on. Superman, Wonder Woman, number one, Dan Waters. I just thought it was okay. I thought the art was okay. Interesting getting the dynamic between John Kent Superman and Yara Flor. Really, the main part of the story I feel like it, for the most part, other than the first couple pages, it really focuses more on Yara Flor. We're talking about a lot of sort of mythology or myth that comes from South America, and talking about, you know, sun gods and things like that. So it was interesting enough, but not enough to feel really compelling. The only real sort of characterization I feel we got from John Kent is in the first couple of pages, where it talks about how he literally does, he has this routine in the morning where this, you know, drinking his coffee takes, you know, whatever amount of nanoseconds, and then he does this, and then he does this, and you know, culminating with him using his heat vision to say good morning to Metropolis every morning, which I'm not, I don't, how does firing your heat vision at the sky make clouds that say good morning, Metropolis? I wasn't quite.
You evaporate the other ones.
Science. I suppose.
I don't know.
The costume is different, I'll say. I'm not saying that I like
it. It's
got
a cape.
It does have a cape. That
first thing I noticed was he has a cape. Yeah.
And that is a positive. And probably the most interesting thing about it is the dynamic between John and Yara, just because it's so different than any dynamic we've ever seen before between Cal and Diana. Much, much different than that. And completely different from the dynamic they show, because we get a time in the Justice League book with just the two of them. And this is very different. So again, going back to the idea of, hey, maybe if the editors talk to each other and say, hey, you know, where does this fall? Is this before? Is it after? It seems like it has to be before, but maybe it doesn't make sense. So yeah, I mean, again, don't think about it too much, but I thought it was okay. That's saying something about the quality of the Future State books overall, being that this very average book, and I would totally give it a 5 out of 10, is one of the better Future State books at a 5. So take of that what you will. I thought the art was pretty solid. At least it was consistent. I didn't have any, you know, big problems with it. I think the color work probably is the highlight of the art, just because it's so sort of primary, which very much suits a superhero book and the story they're trying to tell with these South American gods, these Latin gods or what have you. So from that perspective, I thought the color work needed to be bright, and it was. So I thought that it worked on that level. So, but yeah, other than that, I don't really have much to say. It's just kind of meh. What about you, Trevor?
Yeah, the meh continues. The first page was really good. And then you turn the page and the rest of the book happens. I mean, first of all, like that large widescreen image of the Good Morning Metropolis, that's a fucking meme. Like, that's a meme. Like, I just, like, for a second there, the anatomy looks so fucked. The left hand looks like a rectangle. Everything feels scrunched up. Most of the book, John's face looks really scrunched together, but his face is kind of big. Like, it feels like there's a lot of like surface area with like everything sort of bunched up in the center of the face. There was one really great page of art, and it's Yara Flor jumping to catch the helicopter. I thought that was really, really well laid out, and the composition was solid. He got a lot of energy out of that, so I'll give a lot of credit there. And I will agree with you on the colors. I think the colors were like, they weren't like spectacular, but you know, there was an intent, and it didn't try to go overboard. It just knew what it was, and it got the job done, which is kind of unfortunate that that's the highlight of this book, but it is. I mean, it's just like, most of it was kind of mediocre. I prefer this John Kent than like the super angsty John Kent that we got in the Superman of Metropolis. At least it's a little bit close to his character for me. And like I said, that first page was like a great little bit of narration about John, like how, you know, he takes a step back and seizes the moment and enjoys that. Although I thought it was pretty negligent for him to just like wait until that girder broke, even though he knew it was going to break. He's like, yeah, first, let me just fucking zip zap a Good Morning Metropolis before I save this guy. Like, for all we know, the guy could have died of a heart attack. Like in the second it took for John to catch him to fall. Like, I don't know. I thought that was kind of just negligent. I mean, I don't hate it. And I've certainly like ranked on quite a few books this evening, which I'm giving such a good impression to whoever's hearing me for the first time tonight. But it was, I want to call it meh, but if like the next Batman is my definitive meh, this might be like just sub meh. I don't know. It wasn't god awful, especially by comparison. But it certainly wasn't good either. So do with that what you will.
All right, Nick, what are your thoughts?
This is the best comic book I have ever read in my it's fine. At first I was super stoked because I'm like, oh, we're on Tatooine, this is gonna be great. And then we weren't. So it was a bummer. No, but I do think it's weird how long like Superman does all these exact things every day. He can count things to the nanosecond, but it seems like he doesn't even pay attention. He's not paying attention to anything outside of his routine when he's like, oh wait, there are two suns. Shouldn't I have like even felt that in power level or something? Like, I don't know. It's hard to get, shouldn't get nitpicky about that stuff in a comic book movie or comic, but that's my story nitpick. And then it was fine. I really do agree that I preferred this Wonder Woman and Superman. They're more fun together than the issues of Wonder Woman Superman I've read when it was the classics. So,
all right, Rocky, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, let me tell you something. It reminds me a little bit of Super Sons. You know, when I would read Super Sons, one of the enjoyments of reading Super Sons is that Damian would always insult John and always take pot shots at John's intelligence. And Damian was the smart one, and Damian would always take pot shots at John, young John Kent. And then, but ultimately he's actually a pretty smart cookie. So far, my impression of John Kent in Future State is that he is actually even more stupid than Damian criticized him of being when he was 10 years old. And that's what I find ironic about this. Everything, you know, I share Trevor's comment. I mean, it does seem like a meme. I mean, good morning, Metropolis. Like, first of all, does John Kent even have a secret identity in the future? Why is he wearing pants and a T-shirt? Does he need one? Ever since we had the identity reveal of his dad, why does he have a job? If he doesn't have a job, why is he even bare? It starts off with him on a roof, you know, taking his pants and shirt off, and he becomes Superman. Why does he have a job? Why doesn't he always wear the suit? This doesn't make any sense to me. And so then he flies into the sky, and by the way, the art here is off, and I can give you very specific examples. You know, there's two suns. And by the way, I love the Star Wars reference. Thought you were on Tatooine. That was funny. But the two suns, at one point, John says, you know, he's overpowered. He feels simultaneously overpowered and depowered, which really doesn't make any sense if you think about it. If he's overpowered and depowered, he shouldn't have any powers. But in some panels, he's skinny. And then in the panel at the end, he looks like a Hulk. He's sitting in a cafeteria talking to Yara, and he's like, he looks hulking. Like, it's all over the place. And I'm not sure if it was just bad art, or are we supposed to get the impression that there's that fluctuation because of the two suns? And in any event, the whole thing just sort of, it's kind of all over the place. The high point for me, though, is Yara Flora. I just like her personality. I even like those Latin American gods. I mean, I don't even know their names, which probably isn't a good thing. They should be more, I don't know, the sun and the moon. I didn't know the sun god and the moon god lived together somewhere in Latin America. That's kind of, I don't know if that's just crazy or dumb or interesting, but the whole thing, again, on the one hand, I'm kind of excited that we got thrown into this mess of a story, because it's not actually that, strangely enough, I was entertained by this nonsense. And I don't know if I'm just going crazy or what, or if I should go, you know, if I should drink more. I don't know. But artistically, it was hit and miss with me. And the story, I think, was very meh, very meh. This is my lowest, this is... Overall, the only thing that prevents me from going under a five out of 10 on this was Yara. And that's all I got to say about that.
Speaking of art, you know what I just noticed? John's face looks different on like every page.
Oh yeah.
Like his face looks completely completely different on almost every page. Also, I just noticed, cause a lot of these, admittedly, I was just kind of looking to rip the Band-Aid off and just get over with it. But there's a page where the blonde Aztec god or Mayan god or whatever, when he gets tossed aside by it's
not Solaris,
is it? Solaris, yeah. There's this little graphic accent that makes it look like he hit a floor and then rolled, but he's in the middle of space. There's literally, if you go and look at the page, there's a little accent that's a bounce, a splat looking thing, and then another bounce direction. And there's nothing in space.
And not only that, and John said to Yara in the cafeteria that he could hear Solaris. He heard Solaris in space. He heard him. I mean, I know Superman's got super hearing, but you know, damn, sound strange. Doesn't travel in space. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, another little nitpick, but
yeah, I mean, Superman can't hear his wife, but you know, Superboy can hear a son.
What if he's bouncing off of the invisible jet and it's parked in space?
Well, that must be it.
That has to be it.
Well, explain anything.
This is the future. Remember the Earth in Legion times? It had that protective bubble around it.
And the moon has a super bubble.
That's right.
Well, how about this, guys? I got a question for you. At the beginning, when those two senators are writing, Yara makes them write, you know, I will not embezzle from the people of my city. I will not shoot Wonder Woman. I will not shoot Wonder Woman. I'm wondering, this was a missed opportunity. I'm still waiting to see if this is as a result of Yara's magic lasso. Did she compel them to do that? Or did she just threaten them to do that? It was just one of those things. I was really hoping she'd use. I'm still looking for answers to her sort of magic lasso or her bolo, as she calls it. Anyways, it was just, you know, I love her attitude, you know, please try to shoot me. But in any event, it did pose some more questions that I have about Yara.
All right, let's move on. Eternal Robin. I thought this was one of the better from an overall perspective. I still like the Jessica Cruz story better than this, but you know, this is its own thing, its own, you know, it takes up the whole issue. There's no backups or whatever. And it's, first of all, it's Tim Drake, who probably is my favorite Robin. And I just like the premise. You know, he gets bathed in this Lazarus pit material. That's where the whole Eternal Robin comes around. And I thought it was a really well done story. I think art wise, you know, love the page layouts, which I come to expect that from Eddie Barrows. And the camera moves around and the camera angles are great. And not only does Eddie move the camera around in ways that I like, he also changes the depth of field, which, you know, it's one thing to change the camera around, but if you're always medium distance, that can be boring as well. But, you know, he does zoom in and zoom out. So I thought that was done really well. But the problem I had was kind of in the line work. It looked so different than what I'm used to seeing. And I don't want to say that it's necessarily worse than the art that I've seen from him before. I mean, for me, the best thing Eddie's done in recent years is Freedom Fighters with Robert Venditti. So I'm going through and I'm reading this. And as I get a few pages in, I've got to go back and look. I'm like, why does his art look different and not as, it doesn't jump off the page the way it did in Freedom Fighter. So I had to go back and I'm like, is he working with the same inker? Oh yeah, he is. It's Ibar Ferrer. Is he working with the same colors? Yeah, it's Adriana Lucas. So why does the art not look as good as it does in Freedom Fighters? I don't know if he's just trying to use a different style or he's trying to show that it's, you know, a little bit more of a dystopian drab future, but it's just not his best work. It's still great. It's still way above average, but it's just not as good as what I've come to expect from him. But I did enjoy the story quite a bit. I thought the characterization of Tim was well done. I thought that the, you know, the whole idea of this sort of Lazarus pit was interesting, and seeing Tim sort of drenched in it. You know, he basically gets choked to death, but then gets drenched in this Lazarus resin right at the end. And, you know, despite his broken neck, then he basically rises from the dead, you know, ready for round two. I probably enjoyed this book from start to finish in terms of art and everything, the best of anything from week two. And I'm not familiar with the writer. I hadn't seen anything that, that she's done before, but clearly she is a Tim Drake fan as well. Megan Fitzmartin is her name. So let's go with Rocky. What'd you think?
Well, I share all your sentiments, except I will slightly disagree with you on the upside. I think Eddie Burroughs' art's fantastic. I read and I loved his Freedom Fighters, and I I don't know. I actually fell in love with, I hate Stephanie Brown. I fell in love with Stephanie Brown in this because of the art. It was fantastic. There's that one double page. Well, I guess it's not technically a double page, but the way it is, the way I see it digitally, she looks gorgeous. Stephanie Brown. I mean, the way he draws her with that eye patch, those beautiful blue eyes, that short hair drooping, he really nails it. I mean, I really love, visually, I love this. You made a good comment about the depth of field in the various action scenes and the way it plays out. Very well done. It's raining on some of the scenes and just the different lighting and then the different settings and the way the story progresses and his relationship with Stephanie. And when you consider you got like 22 pages of this, and we have the same 22 pages of Dark Detective. I actually enjoy this more. I thought there was more action. There was more at stake. I love I don't know if I was just naive. I never even thought about the title Robin Eternal. I was surprised when he was killed and then rose, even though it was sort of like it was telegraphed from the beginning. The whole thing just caught me, just a wonderful, pleasant surprise. And yeah, I give it high marks and kudos again. You mentioned the writer, Megan Fitzmartin. I'm not familiar with her, but she absolutely is a Stephanie Brown fan too, as well as a Tim fan, and the art's really well.
Yeah. I think one of the things I forgot to mention is, so she doesn't try to do too much. You know, so many of the Future State titles, they're throwing so much at us to try to set up like background and you know, she just says, okay, here's the story. I'm going to let the art tell the story. And I'm not going to try to squeeze too much in. And I think that's part of what works really well. She's not throwing too much at us. We're not getting these walls of text. So I think that works pretty well. What are your thoughts, Nick?
I dug it, just overall the story and stuff. Good. But my favorite thing about it is the panel layout. I don't normally even notice stuff like that often. But you have a lot of pages with Dutch angles. So, you know, this guy... who's the writer?
The writer's Megan Fitzsimmons.
Okay, so she gets off on Dutch angles, which is cool. Like where it actually churns the pit, like it's not just a Dutch angle, but it, like the black is at the bottom and the top, like the whole page was turned. But my most favorite layout is second to last page. There's a very interesting squared shape that goes inward. The other one kind of comes over it, almost like it's 3D. And I don't know. It just stuff like that is, like I said, I don't notice art often, but just the way either notice a Tom King book, which is 9 panels every time, or you notice something as fluid as this, as far as me. So I like the story, but I really like the way that it was told via mostly. I noticed the panels more than the action scenes themselves, but.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's saying something because you don't usually,
before,
you don't usually notice art that much. You're so into plot and narration that you don't notice it.
Or even there's the other page too, even like where it's a combination of circles and rectangles and just a white background. It's definitely very dynamic. So
what are your thoughts, Trevor?
It was okay. Compared to the lineup of Future State books, it's definitely one of the better ones. Eddie Barrows, for my money, is, I think, the best artist DC has right now. So even when he's at like Eddie Barrows 2, he's at everybody else's 10. So while I did notice Eddie Barrows kind of lacking for Eddie Barrows, he still makes a lot of really, really great choices artistically. I mean, we've been talking about the layouts. He's a master of layout and composition in a way that nobody else in comics is. His backgrounds are still on point. The way he's able to draw the eye, like you made a very adept observation about what he's doing with depth of field, how he's playing with camera, because he takes very simple moments like that alley scene, with Tim and Stephanie, and he's moving the camera around. He's taking advantage of the gestural work. What angle is this gesture going to play off the best and convey this thought or this emotion? I mean, Eddie Barrows, like I said, I mean, he is the most underrated artist in comics. That's for sure. You know, I own two Eddie Barrows pages, both of which I got at an absolute steal. There's no way in hell I should have gotten pages that cheap that are that good. I mean, lovingly the human atom flicking off a bunch of Nazis, and I paid $75 for it, baby. So best $75 I've ever spent. Story wise, it felt super vanilla. You know, I just nothing remotely impressive about the writing. Although I will say she is one of the few that is avoid just mountains of text. So I'll give her credit. I thought the last bit was super like Deus Ex Machina. Like, okay, the magistrate is so thorough that they have complete control of Gotham City. They killed Batman for God's sake, but they don't think that when these cyber things kill people, that the flooding of I assume like Lazarus juice, essentially, they don't think that they could just get brought back to life by it leaking out of the machine. I mean, it seems like a pretty major oversight. And it is just so convenient that Tim Drake happened to get thrown into, the leakage. So, it was meh. But like even meh is pretty good for DC Future State. So I won't be buying this, you know, that's for sure. I think I'm frankly, DC has kind of exhausted me these last 2 years. But Future State's very emblematic of that. So, will I hate reading it? No, mostly because of Eddie Barrows. But will I go out of my way to purchase a copy versus using review copies? Definitely not.
Yeah, I mean, it is sort of a vanilla story. I will agree with you there. But I mean, that just goes to show kind of the lack of quality in Future State titles, that for me, vanilla is like standing out above the rest. So, all right, let's move on to the last book, Teen Titans number one. This is just a mess from the dialogue to the plot to the pacing. It's just, it's sort of the exact opposite of what we got in Robin Eternal. There's so much just stuff in here that Tim Sheridan, the writer, is trying to, you know, I only have two issues and I'm trying to stuff this giant story in, and it's bursting at the seams. I don't think that any of it's necessarily bad from a plot perspective. It might be good if the story had time to breathe, if we got an understanding of the dynamics of these characters and why some of them seem to get along, some of them don't. But we don't get any of that because the story doesn't have any chance to breathe. It's all just shoved at us at a breakneck pace that is uneven. I think the art is again okay, but also emblematic of that unevenness. And it all sort of builds up to this last page, this last reveal that's supposed to be basically fan service. I think that we're supposed to get this last page is supposed to be so impactful as DC fans, as Teen Titan fans. We're supposed to be so happy and overjoyed that we finally get Red X or whatever the hell his name is showing up in a DC comic, that we're supposed to forgive how messy and convoluted and overstuffed the every other page of the story is. And not only that, you know, Dick Grayson, don't call him Nightwing. He doesn't want to be called Nightwing, Dick Grayson. But then in the last page, he throws on this Deathstroke mask. That's not exactly like Deathstroke mask, because he still has sort of the Nightwing symbol there of a mask. And I can't think of anything else. As soon as I saw him, I'm like, okay, so he's Dick Grayson and he's Deathstroke. So he's Dick Stroke. That's all I could think.
It's funny.
What in the absolute hell is going on? You know, you shoved everything but the kitchen sink at us in the regular story so we could get this last page reveal of Dick Stroke and Red X, and we're supposed to be like, oh my god, this is crazy, this is such an impactful moment, I can't wait for the next issue. And all I can think is, I don't care, because the rest of the issue was so like manic. You know, So it's like, am I going to read the next one? I'll probably flip through it. I'll read it because I have to cover it for this. But I'm telling you, like, if we weren't doing these Future State spotlights, I wouldn't even have read this. Like, I would have flipped through it and said, oh my god, look at all this dialogue, look at all this stuff, look at the manic pace, like it's beyond frenetic, right? And I would have not read it. I would have not read it. So I don't know who wants to go first. I'm so wound up, I don't even care. Who wants to go first?
I'll just get out of the way.
All right, go ahead, Nick.
All right. I'm going to call Dick Stroke and the Red Axe the name of my first porno movie. Because that is too good. I am not a fan of the Teen Titans anyway. I just haven't read any of their books. So none of the, I didn't know who any of the characters are unless they appeared somewhere else, like Raven, Beast Boy. You know, I've heard of them all. I guess Beast Boy, Cyborg. I read, this is the last one on my list. I said I got progressively worse on the order of my computer. It's just like the same as giving the chimp the demon. It's like, why are we combining different characters again? Do it once. Cool. But I just didn't get most of it. I don't know who half the characters are. And then it didn't really mean anything to me when Dick Richard dressed up as their ultimate enemy.
Yeah.
Deathstroke. So I was like,
I mean, cool. If you know nothing about Teen Titans and Teen Titans history, you're going to be completely, and I know
he's their arch enemy, but
yeah, and I still felt lost. It was ridiculous. I don't know. What are your thoughts, Trevor?
What's interesting is, like, I mean, it sucks because I felt like there were good ideas in here that, like, there was just no breathing room. You know, I couldn't appreciate the good ideas because there was so much going on. Half the time I was actually pretty confused. I was like, you know, we're like, at first we're talking about some drama and then Raven's fighting a three-headed dragon and then Raven's like alone and then she's with a team and then you know, Dick Stroke is just upsetty spaghetti all over the place. Like, there's just so much happening here. And what's interesting is for all of the bullshit and all of just the lack of understanding of pace, I'm still like, I do. I mean, maybe it's just because I grew up with the Teen Titans cartoon. I do want to see like how the Red X thing pans out, if it does pan out. But this issue is very emblematic of just like this horrible pacing that's consistent throughout DC Future State. And it you know, I stopped feeling bad for these writers for having the two issues, because I think to myself, okay, you know, you have two issues. Why are you biting off more than you can chew? You know, you have two issues. It's very clear that DC doesn't give a shit about what time and when you're telling this. You could literally do anything, as emblematic by something like Swamp Thing that's so far out in the future, that's unconnected to everything. You know, for as mediocre as Swamp Thing was, at least Ram V's like, you know what? I only have two issues. I'm not going to worry about about explaining to you what's happening with Future State. I'm just going to go off and do my own thing. And I feel like more people should have done that and been able to set their own pace, because I mean, like you said, this is just frantic. It's so frantic. And I wanted to be interested in it. I really, really did. Because I love the idea of like a Titans Academy thing. It brings me back to Jeff Johns' Teen Titans run, which I am very fond of. I love Rafa Sandoval on art, and in, you know, I think he has some issues with like consistencies of figures, but you know, ultimately he's still better than pretty much everybody else drawing Future State books in terms of what he's doing art wise here, albeit not his best work. You know, I mean, am I going to buy the next issue? I don't know. Will I read it for the sake of my childhood to see what's going on with Red X? Yeah, probably. But there's just way too much going on. This like really fell out of Tim Sheridan's hands.
I would add to that, Tim Sheridan, we have reason to worry, because Tim Sheridan is actually the guy who's going to be continuing to write Teen Titans in March. And he's actually a cartoon guy. He actually, he did Reign of Superman. He's done some Scooby-Doo stuff. And this is a really, really, really bad sign. I'm definitely worried about the future of Teen Titans. This is just plain awful. And appropriately, this issue is actually called Ruins, and it's perfect in more ways than one. Actually, on the second page, at one point, Amico says to Nightwing, sorry, she's whispering, sorry, he's been extra Nightwingy today. And what I find ironic about that is I don't recognize Dick Grayson in this comic. I don't. Yep. He's not Nightwing at all. Now, I think that's the point, in fairness, I think that we're supposed to say in the future states, something's happened to Dick Grayson to make him feel this way. They're on the ruins of Titan's Tower. But there are so many questions. Everybody talks cryptically. There isn't a single character that appears to be curious as to what the is going on. Because, you know, usually you can have a couple characters be cryptic. It adds suspense. But usually there's at least one character that plays it straight. That states the obvious. You know, could you please, you know, could somebody tell me what's going on? The reader is just as lost as the characters seem to cryptically refer talk to. Who is Red X? Why should we care? Why is he locked up? What is it? Why does Dick Grayson not want to be called Nightwing when he's kind of dressed and he looks like Nightwing? What's with the H style? Why was it lying around in the ruins? I mean, didn't they check out the ruins to begin with? What is the timeline of events? Why did Teen Titans Tower even blow up? These are questions that I just rattle off that we don't even get the hint of an answer to. How did Donna Troy die? It showed her death. Who's the guy in the bubble? We don't know. Are we supposed to care? Is he a villain? Is he a good guy? Why am I supposed to care? The hints of Teen Titans Academy, I'm not interested in the Academy anymore. Is this the future of it? Why should I care about the Academy when this one it leads to? The problem with DC with Teen Titans, they always go back to the same cliche of Deathstroke, some version of Deathstroke always has to be present. They're always trying to recapture past glories. They're always trying to do an X-Men Days of Future Past for Teen Titans. For God's sakes, just tell a simple story first instead of trying to reinvent the wheel. It's frustrating. Now, if very convoluted ideas, some ideas are cool. They got hints. The Academy could be cool. The Red X, what happened to Dick Grayson, Cyborg and Beast merging. All these are potentially cool ideas, but the mystery upon mystery upon mystery with no straight talk, with no hint, and with only one issue left to go, why the hell would I want to come back for a second issue? Huge disappointment.
I think it's just one of those situations where here we go with Tim Sheridan had all these great plans for Teen Titans 5G. Then he finds out I only got two issues. I'm going to just shove everything in there. Because here's the thing, and you said it yourself, Rocky, he's going to be writing Teen Titans when we get to Infinite Frontier starting in March. I guarantee you all the things he's shoving in here, now he's going to go back and start foreshadowing them. Oh, here's the origin. You know, here's the beginning of the path to get to Dickstroke. Here's the beginning of the path to get to Cybeast. You know, here's the foreshadowing of Donna Troy's death. But you know what? You didn't tell a good story in your Future State issues, so I don't care. You didn't make me care about Dickstroke. You didn't make me care about Cybeast. You didn't make me care that Donna Troy is not there. So, this to me is possibly the worst Future State book of that have come out in the first 2 weeks. It's god awful. So, but I do think that this week is slightly better based on the strength of that Jessica Cruz story. I did like Robin Eternal. So the first week overall, I gave Future State the first week a 4.5. I'm going up to a 5. I'm saying it's averaging a 5 here. We're at a C, C grade, C letter grade. So what about you, Nick? Give us your grade overall and let everybody know where they can find you online.
You can find me at, I'm going to tease one in front of the other. You can find me at Geeky Nixel on Twitter. I do two podcasts right now for LRM. Marvel Multiverse Mad Mondays, where on this past Monday we did episode 1 and 2 of WandaVision and discussed it for 2 hours, which was too long. And Break Geek Radio, the podcast, which we also discussed WandaVision, but only for like an hour, which was better. I give it a 6 this week because, I gave it lower than you last week, I think a 4 maybe. I gave it a 6. It's all very average, but I do like Grifter and the Guy Gardner humor enough that's the kind of comics I want to read more of, because everything in DC is so dark that, not just DC, I'm not being a Marvel versus DC. Everything, I mostly read Detective and Batman every week. Those are the two comics I get, and they're so dark. So it's fun to see the lighter characters of DC. So that brings up what I would probably give a 5 otherwise.
All right, what about you, Rocky?
I'm going to go with a 7. In fairness, I really should take Teen Titans out of it, because the second week would have been either tied or better than the first week. But Titans did drag it down. I would, so but Titans nonetheless was part of it. So I'd still go with 7. I gave the first week a 7.5. This is a 7, and I'll leave it at that.
And remind everybody where they can find you online.
I'm Comic Boom with an exclamation mark on YouTube and at Metropolis 40 on Twitter.
All right, Trevor, finish this out.
What did I give it last week? A 4?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's about a 4. Like, it's about the same. A lot of mediocrity. Dark Detective was good. I can't actually think of anything else that I would consider good from this week. There was stuff that I just didn't hate, and that's cool. At best, aside from like Dark Detective, I mean, like I said, Grifters was fine. Like it was a cool little romp. I don't know. I'm honestly just getting more and more exhausted with Future State, and there are a lot of things that like I started picking up that I'm like heavily considering just like cutting completely. Like, I honestly, based on like what I'm seeing so far, I think the only two books that I would be buying from Future State are Dark Detective and maybe Wonder Woman. Like that seems to be about it. Otherwise, like, I could leave everything else on the table. I don't know. I'm so exhausted by DC in general, but Future State especially. Just the level of mediocrity, the lack of care, just the Future State is emblematic of DC's poor editorial. That I could go on about that for hours, frankly, but I won't. I'll spare everybody. In terms of like where you can find me, you can find me on YouTube, Dark Knight Nation. I review, analyze, and discuss comics. Sometimes you'll see guys like Jason and Boom on the channel to have typically some evergreen comic book discussions. Sometimes we get topical. My reviews tend to be sort of analytical. I've been called surgical when it comes to comics, which I guess is an interesting metaphor. I also have a comic book called Area 51, The Helix Project, that has its first issue already out now. If you were to go to darknightnation.com/shop, you can pick up a physical copy for yourself or a digital copy. Otherwise, if you want to keep your digital comics consistent, it is available on Comixology as well with that sweet, sweet guided view. I'd highly advise you check it out. I'm not going to really sell my book because I'm just... Future State wore me the hell out, and I'm not even in the mood to sell my own comic book. So if you want to follow my comic book exploits, you can go to Twitter at PWatchPress, Pocket Watch Press. Thanks for having me on, Jace. Sorry, I feel like I was like real, real down low tonight. But
given our honest opinions here, and the fact of the matter is it hasn't been very good. And what it's reminded me of, unfortunately, is Convergence, right?
Oof.
That Band-Aid that covered the move of DC from New York to Burbank. And you don't hear too many people talk about Convergence ever, you know. Mm-hmm. It was years ago now, and it didn't really have an impact. It's not something people look at, other than the fact that it's John Kent's first appearance. And if it wasn't for that, you know, all those books, except for the John Kent, except for the Superman Convergence title, they can all be found in like quarter bins because nobody wants them because they're just frankly not very good. And I think Future State may be heading down the same path. So, but we'll continue to cover it. Maybe we'll be surprised. Maybe there'll be some stuff that impresses us. I'm kind of struggling with it myself. So that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. Thanks to all my co-hosts for joining me. And thanks to all you listeners for joining in as always. And we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.